Welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. I'm coming to you from the North Shore of Oahu, where weekly I interview some of the world's most inspiring people from business, philanthropy, and entertainment. I love collecting humans, and these are some of my favorites I've found along the way. This podcast is brought to us by Capita Financial Network.
Do you need help with the next steps of your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call or schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.
Hi, welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. Today we have an amazing entrepreneur and person who's made it a creative way using his marketing skills to defend his faith and talk about the values and core beliefs that he wants to share with the world. And we're so thrilled to have Kurt Frankum on the show. Kurt, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, Lindsay, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So Kurt, we're going to kind of start off by talking a little bit about you and your background. Why don't you share a little bit your journey, because you're the founder of Leading Saints, and maybe you can share a little bit about what got you here, how you got started in this space. I mean, essentially, I think when I think of you, I think of like LDS apologetics or, you know, bringing awareness and support to people's faith journeys in a time when that could be pretty unpopular. There's a lot of divisive conversations around religion and politics. And I think, you know, it's very brave of you to take a stand in what you believe in and a sensitive thing. So I'd love to hear a little bit of your story about what got you here and how you navigate all of this incredibly complex stuff.
Yeah, sure. Happy to go on that journey with you. So I'm born and raised, I'm a Utah boy. I grew up in West Valley City, Utah, which is the west side essentially of the Salt Lake Valley. And growing up, I was very creative, artistic. I always dreamed about being a Disney animator someday. That did not work out, but that was my plan. Maybe it wasn't God's plan. And so I grew up as a Latter-day Saint, and you know, we went through the typical traditional steps of being a Latter-day Saint. Went on a mission to Sacramento, California. I learned Spanish there. Rode around on bikes and drove in cars sometimes, and was a Latter-day Saint missionary. And then I came home from my mission, and you know, I always really struggled in college. I've never really been a great student. In fact, I had to start out in the community college path because my ACT scores were way below standard. And I wanted to go to the Brigham Young University, but they rejected me three times. So I swallowed my pride and went to the University of Utah, even though I'm a huge BYU football fan and for other sporting events. And then I got a 2-year degree in art, and that's when I realized that my Disney animator career was nothing but a dream. And so I let that go and switched to business marketing. And really, I found some passion there that I really appreciated, the creative aspect of business, of creating something, of marketing it, and really exchanging value for value. And in that, you know, I started in various jobs, sales jobs after that. But on the side, you know, my religious experiences, maybe some don't know that in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it's a full lay ministry. So, you know, you could be a mechanic, a CPA, a financial advisor, and they'll come to you and say, hey, we want you to be the lead pastor or the bishop. And so I was 28 years old, had a marketing degree. I was running a web development company at the time, and they asked me to be the bishop of this inner city ward. And I had been I met my wife years prior to this in a singles ward, as they call it in our congregation. And I was the elders quorum president there. And that was sort of my first go at trying to be a leader in a religious context. And I made all the typical mistakes, you know, lots of guilt trip lessons. I didn't, you know, just burn the candle at both ends, over investing myself in doing a good job, because you know, I was asked to serve in this capacity, especially in a religious, faithful, you know, faith context. I wanted to do a good job, and I just kept falling on my face in anything I tried. And I really wanted to make a difference, and it didn't work. And so years went on. I was called to be the bishop of this ward, and I thought, you know, this is weird. Like, here we are as a lay ministry, and everybody wants to do a good job, but I don't even know what the other guy's doing. And I could walk into a Barnes & Noble, a bookstore, and there'd be bookshelves full of life leadership, business leadership, like all this research, this rich research about how to lead people, how to motivate people, how to public speak. But nobody was really talking about it in the context of my faith. And so I thought, you know, I'm not a leadership guru by any means, but maybe I can create a platform to bring those experts, the PhDs, the psychologists, the experienced leaders, and we can at least talk about these principles, about best practices on being a good leader in the church and see what we can learn. And so it started in 2010 as a hobby blog, and then it was sort of a side hustle I had. And then in 2014, I started the podcast, Leading Saints. That's when it really got some traction. And then we became a 501c3 nonprofit in 2016, and I went full-time at that point. And it's been growing ever since. And so it's just been, you know, it's a different entrepreneur path for sure. You know, there's no big buyout at the end, you know, running a nonprofit, but definitely the passion of waking up every day, creating content for church leaders across the world. And the emails I get are just phenomenal, so encouraging, that are worth anything else in the world, of just hearing that we're making a difference through this content for church leaders around the world. So that's the story.
Amazing. So you originally was just to help people like you that were in this position,
yeah,
that had this tremendous responsibility to lead and minister to a congregation. And when I think of you guys, I think because I've listened to some of your content and I, you know, it's really quality stuff, but I you're kind of tackling a lot of really hard questions. That's why I thought of you guys as an apologetics site, because you're addressing hard things. Is that because that's the most common problem that leaders are running into today, is questions and, you know, concerns with doctrine or history or whatever it may be?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we don't go, I mean, there are definitely some more formalized, you know, they identify as an apologetic, you know, like Farah Latter-day Saint and B.H. Roberts Foundation and those things. But what I noticed being a young bishop is that, you know, people would set appointments up with me for various reasons. And I would get this list, you know, on maybe a Tuesday night when I'm at the church, and had a list of names on it, but I didn't know what they needed to talk to me about. I didn't know what they were going to bring in and lay on my desk and say, so what do you think, right? And so I just noticed it was just helpful to gain a little bit of perspective on really the tough issues. What if somebody wanted to come in and share a struggle with faith, or about church history, or about experiencing same-sex attraction, or, you know, identifying in the LGBTQ world? You know, how would I say the right thing? And all this pressure of, you know, they look to you as a faith leader, as somebody who represents Jesus Christ to them. And, you know, you don't want to mess up, right? And so I just wanted to create a place where people could at least begin to grasp the dynamics they're dealing with, not because I had all the answers or the five-step plan that would solve everybody's issue, but at least they'd be a little bit more prepared to have those discussions with the people they love.
Gosh, I mean, you say that and I just get overwhelmed, because when you said it meant it's so heavy, like to say people they see you as representing Jesus Christ. I mean, this perfect embodiment of love. I mean, I'm a believer in him and following him the best I can. And like, I would hate for someone to look to me to be like, you know, speaking on behalf of Jesus. Like, I can do my best to share what I've understood as I follow him, and I can do my, but like, that's a tremendous weight and kind of almost unfair. I kind of am bummed that, you know, as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I'm bummed that that is the mantle, but at the same time, because that's kind of too much. No person should become between you and perfect love deity. But at the same time, like, that is what your role is. It is a call to try your best in a flawed human state to do that. And I've had the most beautiful positive experiences lately with leadership, as I've had my own faith journey that has taken a less than orthodox or conventional path that I didn't imagine. As I've gone in and been completely transparent and open about my struggles, my concerns, my heartache, the way that they've held space for me, I think things are really changing. You know, I know historically some of the things I brought up and some of the things that I'm struggling with and some of the places where I'm at on my faith journey, I think they wouldn't have had the kind of grace or the kind of capacity or the kind of open aperture that I've experienced with leadership lately, which brings me a lot of joy. It makes me feel like we're getting more along the lines, to use a very Christian term, to the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. Like, people are trying to get in tune more with the relationship of God, the relationship with the individual, the relationship with where people's hearts are, less about the transaction or the external metrics or, you know, meritocracy, if you will, but more relational. And I'm just so thrilled because at first I thought I went to move to Hawaii and I thought maybe my leadership there was just filled with grace. I'm like, oh, the church is more true in Hawaii, you know. But then I came back to, you recently moved to the Alpine area, and like I've had those beautiful exchange where I just felt so held in my totality, so loved, so non-judged, and so received and so accepted just exactly as I am. And that was very healing for me. Are you finding that there's this real shift? Is that just my anecdotal experience? Are we seeing a move through leadership? Because you probably hear a lot from a lot of people and know a bit.
You know, I definitely say, all things considered, I'm very encouraged with like the direction that our lay leadership ministry is headed in. You know, and it's tough. And I think, you know, from some people like to turn to like the institutional church and say, you know what, why aren't you doing more, or, you know, training people more, or whatever these things is. But man, that's a tough gig for this institutional church that's now over an international church with different cultures and dynamics.
Wow.
And here they are trying to put out handbooks where it's like, oh, well, this will mean this in this country and that in that country. And, you know, what should we do? And I just see the more of a shift, you know, from the institutional side of more autonomy for leaders, which I think is incredibly healthy of saying,
great,
you know, you are what we call the key holder, right? Like, You call the shots, and you follow the guidance that you feel like you're receiving, and do what's best for those that are in your congregation. Love them, encourage them, let them know that this is a gospel of grace, of hope, of encouragement, and that their life in this gospel is going to be much better than maybe outside in a path that's more secular, right? And so I'm definitely encouraged by all things. And but of course, you know, you talk with people and they can point at, no, you got to meet this bishop, or I had this terrible experience. And I do empathize with those that have experienced that, because it does happen. And oftentimes I was that leader. You know, I was just this young guy, inexperienced, doing my best. And I probably said some things that, man, if I could go back, I would change.
Amazing. I mean, don't we all feel that we look back? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, there is a lot of pain around religion at large, not just in the LDS community. Sometimes, you know, I've had some exchanges over the years that have really, like, because I've been able to travel extensively and work with different faith communities and leaderships at the highest levels of the Catholic Church, of, you know, the Protestant Church, of different, I mean, the Jewish community. I've been able to, you know, the Islamic community. I've just been able to see this is kind of a human problem. It's not so much a LDS or the Mormon problem. It's like the idea that, you know, we're very, we're flawed as humans. And anytime we create policy at an organizational level, people will get hurt, because policy is not a one size fits all. You know, individuals are involved. And when you create a blanket policy that should encompass most people, there's going to be people on the outsides that are not going to, you know, adequately be serviced or appropriately applied. I mean, you think of any business, right? You create a business as an entrepreneur and you come up with a policy for returns, or a policy for business hours. And then a situation comes up where you're like, wait, we didn't foresee this particular unique situation where maybe we need to like accommodate. And the most frustrating thing as a consumer or a customer or a person with the utility of that business is like, wait a minute, no, like, my situation is different. Like, I get what your policy is for, but what if this is not what happened in my situation? And that's kind of how I can see religion struggling. Do you find that with your work, do these leaders grasp that that's the dynamic that they're dealing with, that they're kind of in the tension between application and then theory, you know, so to speak?
Yeah, for sure. The struggle that a lot of leaders face that maybe a lot of people don't realize until they're in those seats is that, you know, you want to represent the organization that you represent in a very positive way, in a way that they've asked you to do. But at the same time, you want to show a lot of empathy. And for example, sometimes leaders really struggle with, what hat am I wearing? Am I representing the organization, or am I trying to be a friend to this person and I'm trying to empathize? But, well, what if they're doing something that we classify as sinful? Maybe I need to say that, but if I say that, I could offend, right? It's just really difficult dance. But I think more and more the resources are coming for leaders to just understand how to navigate these policies and help them feel like that they have a place there in the pews on Sundays, and they're wanted there. And some leaders do it better than others. I'll be the first to admit that. But I really do think we're headed in the right direction.
Oh, that's really great to hear. So as a person that gets, I guess I would call you like a convener, or like a platform for so many different inbound responses of what it's like to lead in the church or what's happening on the ground. I feel like you might be someone that's like has a real pulse on things. What are the biggest issues that leaders in the LDS faith are facing, like as they're leading? What is the biggest, what are the kind of, I mean, I would assume a few, but I would just love to hear without my assumptions clouding.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, the issues I hear first when I ask a leader a similar question is the youth of the church, right? The rising generation. And which I think any of us who's been around a teenager, been close to a teenager, can empathize with that. Of, you know, there's so much going on in this world, social media, the demands, the dynamics happening at maybe a school relationship or whatever, and your heart breaks for these young people because you remember looking at them when they're 7, 8, 9 years old, the sweet, you know, innocent child that was just enjoying life, and now they're they're experiencing these new feelings, dynamics, cultural pressures. And so a lot of leaders are trying to double down and just really helping that demographic. And our church has made a shift, especially for like the bishop and his counselors to be more focused on youth. And then, you know, just the lack or the dwindling faith at times, you know, as general broad surveys say that the nuns, right, the people with no religion, no religion affiliation are the fastest growing group in the country.
Oh, and nuns, like N-O-N-E.
Yeah,
okay, I thought
right.
You meant
non-Catholic
nuns.
Like nuns. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of the buzzword that the researchers use. So the nuns that have no religion, no religious affiliation are the fastest growing group in the country. And every local church leader can feel that when, man, we had that family. They were just this stalwart family that were so dedicated, and now they don't even come to church. And in fact, they're questioning if they even believe in God anymore, right? And so they want to be such a resource here because they know that religion does contain answers that can be very encouraging, very hopeful, very grace-filled, that gives people a reason to get up in the morning and give it one more go at life. And so, yeah, just the faith struggles, another big one. And then, of course, you know, mental illness, making sure people are getting the resources they need. And one thing that has even me concerned is that to find a good therapist is really difficult. Anybody who is, you know, realizes, I think I need to see someone. Well, you know, just the other day I talked to a guy and he said, I mean, my life is in chaos right now. And I call up and he was put, you know, 8 weeks out was the next appointment they had. And he's just like, no, I need it like tomorrow at the latest, you know? And so the whole mental health industry, hopefully there's some more innovation, and that's maybe a call out to the other entrepreneurs out there that's a place that really we need some help because there's a huge need. And that's what I've really caught myself, you know, there's this whole life coach industry that's sort of springing up. And of course, there's poor life coaches, but I've met a lot of poor therapists as well. And so I just say, hey, if you want to be like life coach and get whatever certification that you feel like you need, and jump in here and talk with somebody, maybe they would help, right? And so it's one of those all hands on deck in society with this mental health you know, epidemic that's just so. I mean, every family is feeling it.
That's really interesting. So you went through youth and then faith deterioration or faith crisis or, you know, issues of general faith at large, and then mental health are the three major things.
Yeah. And I'll add one. This is a hidden one that just in my personal journey and research that I feel like often gets overlooked. And that is men's issues. The male demographic of it's like 35 to 50 is the most likely to experience a suicide than any other demographic. And it's so easy to get hyper-focused on the youth. And I mean, of course, like I mentioned, they need resources and help. But we often think, well, you know, the older men, they're sort of, you know, they just get with life and man up and you know, get a hold of their life. That'll be fine. But we got to worry about these youth because we don't want them to end up like that. But in my opinion, like if we want to fix the youth or give the youth the best gift we can give the youth is walk down the hall and help the men. And if we can energize the men, it impacts all other demographics. A home with a male leader or a male father who is engaged in religion those children have 90% chance of maintaining a religious life for the rest of their life. If it's a mother figure who's the main religious figure, it's something like 30 or 40% chance that those children will have a religious life. So that masculine figure, I think, is really this hidden issue that a lot of us, we don't know what to do with that demographic or to nurture them and help them overcome some of the issues they're facing.
Wow, that's huge. So, I mean, when you speak of that, I have three sons, and I think about having struggled with my own mental health. I think heavens have been mentally well for the last 2 years, but I had like a 7-year period where I was in deep struggle with anxiety and depression, and got the care I needed, but I ran after it with so much ferocity. Like I had really high functioning depression. And so, you know, some people are bedridden where they can't get out of bed. Fortunately and unfortunately, I was really high functioning. So it was like, sometimes those are the people that are most at risk. I understand from statistics of actually taking action on some of their despondence in terms of like suicide, because people that are like bedridden, they don't come up with a method or a plan or a strategy. They like actually are so debilitated. They're kind of in hibernation almost. Like it's almost like they're offline. But whereas people that are in kind of a high functioning thing, they're the ones that can actually like are more likely to take action on things. But I remember when I was in such a bad state, like I was so blessed to have incredible network and be a fairly competent person so I could actually like go and seek and resources. And I just have always thought, man, if you didn't feel it was okay to get that help, and men are generally stigmatized higher on asking for help and you know, not able to talk about emotions, and those things are all socialized. They're also biological part of it, right? Not as verbal. They don't process the same way as women, all of these things. So there's a lot going on. But when you mentioned like having bad therapists, you know, I recently read, I can't remember the statistic, but it was like an absurd amount of mental health professionals actually have mental illness themselves. And I think it makes sense to me because these people are people who have a lived experience. They get drawn into
it. They needed answers, right?
Yeah. And they went into it. Then they have empathy. They have greater empathy, but it also leads to some problems. There's a lot of people in the field that are not doing well. And if you don't have your own oxygen mask on, these are people that aren't actually hold themselves, giving advice and projecting. And oh my gosh, that's rough, right? Like, so it's rife with a lot of potential risk. And I think about being a church leader today that, like you said, is a layperson, and they're not prepared to handle mental health issues. Right. They're not prepared to counsel in marriage, and yet they're the front line for a lot of families. Like someone's dealing with major mental health crisis or major, you know, rupture in relationship or major business and things. And these aren't people that have any of that skill. So how intimidating. What do you find the church is doing to help relieve that? Because that feels really unfair, because they're thrown in there, they're just doing their best, and they're trying to like, you know, hold up a dam with their fingers that's like leaking. I mean, what are they doing to support them, to your point, when there aren't good mental health services and they aren't trained? Do they tell them, do not advise on these issues? You know, here are the resources. Like what is the church doing to address that?
Yeah, there's definitely an encouragement for church leaders to point people to appropriate resources, you know, especially if they're experiencing intense mental health issues. And a lot of help just coming to leaders of how to identify that, right? Like what's a bad day and what's like actually depression, and, you know, to make sure that they don't overlook that. And then, you know, the church, I think, is working tirelessly with, you know, they have their own arm of therapy called Family Services that they can send people to for resources. They've just revamped the addiction recovery program that they have. You know, and more resources than any, just even our fast offering program, which people donate money to, that a local leader can use to, if someone can't afford therapy, you know, so that nobody ever has to get turned away because of cost. And, so is there more to be done? Definitely. But as I've had the chance to walk around in the church office buildings and things like that, people are working tirelessly to figure this out. But it is such a, it's one of those things, like, you know, social media and other dynamics are working overtime as well on to counteract the good that's we're trying to do as well. So we're, you know, this is a world at war, and it can be daunting sometimes, but there's definitely always hope. And as we look to Jesus Christ for the answer.
I love that answer. It's so hopeful, so filled with hope. Yeah. So one of the things that comes to my mind when I think of issues with leadership today in today's world, especially with, you said, culture and the shift that's happening globally around LGBTQ issues. You mentioned that briefly. That's one of the issues that I've really struggled with, right? Like, I've been really transparent about that to anybody who would talk to me about it, as I genuinely believe it's a biological thing. I don't think people choose right. any of this. I think that the research shows it, my lived experience shows it with friends and loved ones. And I think we know so little about what's going on biologically, and we're learning. And I really fear that we're on the wrong side of history about a lot of how we're approaching that. And time has already shown that. Like, the church's official responses to that issue have greatly shifted in the last 20, 30 years. The things that were spoken over the pulpit have been severely divorced as, like, highly offensive and not okay, that what we're saying said. Now they're saying the opposite. And there's dynamics where, you know, they used to, from the pulpit, I mean, I've seen these things are so devastating, but it was like blaming parents or, you know, accusing people of pedophilia and certain other things in yeah. conjunction with these issues, like, or these dynamics. And it just, like, it's so heartbreaking to see that there's nobody saying, like, I'm so sorry we were wrong. There's just, like, it just is a moving forward, and that's where people's trust equity is going down. What do you find are leaders getting help to address this? I, you know, my experience, like I said recently, when I shared this with my local leadership, they were so humble and gentle and like, yeah, we don't know. And we are totally trying to figure this out. And this is a really heartbreaking issue. And at least there was like a contrite heart and an openness to, like, you know, here we know what the church's stance is, but yes, this is really complex and nobody is navigating this without being unscathed. You know what I mean? What do you see is happening in this space around that issue? And how can you encourage people that are either have been hurt by that through the church or in the church, or people who are living that right now in the tension and the pain, or leaders are having, and people who are trying to stay active and stay stalwart and stay in positions of fellowship with the church that are struggling? Like, what advice are you guys giving?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question that could go in so many directions. I think the first place to start was just recognizing, like, the hurt that individuals experience in the past for things that were hurtful. Maybe even a local church leader said that was very discouraging and didn't have much hope and was, you know, not much understanding. I've been affiliated with a group called North Star that has been so helpful in me just understanding these things without that personal experience myself, or even a close loved one, you know, in my immediate family. I think a big component of this that I always encourage church leaders to do is exposure to individuals that experience this, hearing their story, their journey, without this understanding of, or this pressure of, like, well, we got to make sure that we fix that, or that, you know, that you're on the right path, or these things. But just hearing the story and getting that exposure, building empathy towards that. And then, you know, the research that's coming out, and, you know, research can be a double-edged sword in so many ways, but a group out of BYU did a phenomenal research of understanding not just youth, but LGBT youth. And the more and more research I see is that individuals who are engaged in a religious life, and LGBTQ individuals who are engaged in a religious life, have a higher mental health on the positive side of things, lower suicidality, those types of things. And so I think it's important for church leaders to feel empowered to offer a religious framework and option to them as a viable option to encourage people down. So much in society and media and things you hear, I think the screaming message is like, no, if you're that type of person, you just need to be who you are, you know, reject all faith and religion, because that will just bring shame. But more and more research is showing just the opposite, that it has very positive responses. Now, data is data, research is research, people are people. And so person by person, you know, we can't just offer them a cookie cut solution and say, this is it, just do that. But I think it's important for church leaders, and this is something we talk about a lot on Leading Saints, is to feel empowered to say, you know, this is a viable option to try in your journey of positive mental health, in your journey of happiness, of joy, and finding a very positive of life, that this religious experience with restrictions and commandments and things we're asked to do and not do, it is a viable solution to do that.
That's so fascinating. I haven't heard that research. I'm sure people could take issue that it came from, you know, the source it came yeah. from, because of biases
sure.
of how
yeah, sure.
correlation and
as
causation
all research.
All research.
Is
exactly. yep. Exactly. You have to be always, like you said, it's a double-edged sword, but it's interesting. I definitely feel like what is exciting to me, or what gives me kind of like this feeling of comfort or hope, is that we can have these kinds of conversations. Like the fact yeah. that we are having these kinds of conversations, we should be having them, right? And in the past, I think people were really afraid to speak their truth because of compliance and belonging and community and what the implications were. And I just am grateful that we're braving in a world where we can say, hey, hold on, can we just talk? Can we just pause? Can we be humble and ask questions? Can we be curious? That kind of stuff is really hopeful to me. And the beautiful part is, like, as somebody who's chosen to stay involved in my faith community, I net, because I'm all in on Jesus. I believe the church brings me closer. I believe the church is a vehicle, or like an institution, an organization of human beings. It's not where I get the truth, or it's not where the truth is, or where love is. It's just a group of people doing our best to know what the truth is and follow the truth. But the truth is actually a person for me. It's Jesus Christ. Like, that's the way and the truth and the light. And so I just constantly ask myself, does this mechanism and this community and this and these belief systems and constructs and tools, do they bring me closer? And I can answer that for myself that yes, it does, right? It brings me closer to Him and to love. And that's what I'm, you know, trying to do the best I can. And but I really appreciate people that, because like you said, in a world where religion is, there's a lot of emotion. It's very highly charged, very triggering for a lot of people, the world that we're in today around these issues. What have you found has been the most painful part of taking a stance or putting yourself out there in a public way like this for you personally, like on a personal level, as an entrepreneur, as a figure, as a face, as a voice? What are the parts that are kind of like, where some days you're like, why am I doing this? Because every entrepreneur has that, right? We have these moments of doubt.
Yeah. You know, the unique characteristic of my organization, and I'm sure there's like maybe for-profit organizations and companies or entrepreneurs that experience this, but we're dependent on a huge, ginormous institutional church, right? And if we upset that church, then we go away. And so, you know, we need to be diplomatic that way, and we want to help without helping too much. And so we also don't want that institution to see us like, hey, you're helping too much, like back off, right? And so it's this unique dynamic that we experience. And many times as this small, you know, organization that can, you know, I can find a topic and put out an episode the next day, where there's a lot of PR and communication dynamics that the church deals with, that they can't do that, right? And even though I want them to, they can't do that. And so sometimes the frustration for me is like, you know, it's like, hey, you know, move as fast as I'm moving. You know, I kind of want the institutional church to go faster. And don't you see the solution? It's right there in front of you. Just go, right?
Gosh, yeah.
And I've had to build a lot of just empathy and patience, especially. Yes. And it's been helpful as I interact with those in the institutional church, of just saying like, hey, listen, like, here's 10 reasons why that would be a nightmare if we move that quick. Or, you know, again, we're an international church. That may work for people in Utah, but what about people in Sierra Leone? You know, like, there's so much to consider. So, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with it, but yeah, there's maybe tough days when I think, I just want to help more and more. And I feel like we've found some solutions, but, you know, with changing culture, it's just this slow shift at times that when I wanted to go faster.
I'm so grateful you said that. One of the things that healed me most in my relationship with the church and my faith of origin was actually holding in its totality, is having empathy and compassion. And yeah. I think part of why I've had beautiful experiences recently with leadership in again, I thought maybe I just got lucky. Like, we call it Bishop Roulette. You know, you might have and it's like, I thought maybe I just got lucky. But then the fact that I just recently had people that didn't know me had just moved in, and they had the same beautiful, benevolent, grace-filled response to me, I think is, I believe is partly my posture towards them. I think that I show up with respect for the process, for respect for what they're dealing with the difficulty that it would be to hold space for some of my nuanced beliefs or might come from. And I don't come in with a chip on my shoulder, angry or proving a point or trying to be disruptive. Like, I'm just like, hey, this is where I'm at. This is me. I love and respect you. I'm holding space for you. I feel like I can belong to myself first, and then, you know, because of God's love, I feel like I belong to God, and so I feel whole. I can hold myself in my totality, and then I can hold the bishop or the leadership in front of me in their totality. I can hold the church institution, and then the culture at large, those who are in pain with it, all of it, making this big arena for making space for all of these different parts of ourselves as human beings, which allows for a more flexible, healthy interaction, and has created so much safety and so much joy. And because at the end of the day, I want to belong. So does everybody else. So if I first belong with myself, I think people find ability to feel safer and belonging with you too.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'm wondering if you feel that way, because I love what you said about building empathy, because it's so true. Yeah. If you look at a church in its totality, you can have so much space for some of the challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. And the tough dynamic with that is, even, you know, you read in the Bible, and the one group that the Savior like lectured or got after were the Pharisees or the religious leaders. So it's so easy to sort of feel like, you know, empowered, like, yeah, you know, they are Pharisees, and we should go in their temple and flip some tables, right? But just because Pharisees are church leaders doesn't mean that church leaders are Pharisees. And we need to have empathy even for church leaders who are striving to do those things, do their best and understand. And even though maybe they're walking slower than we like or moving slower than we like, but even church leaders need empathy.
Oh, that's such a cool line. You're so right. And what one of the things that really humbled me in my growth as a human being, and I have to re-remember this all the time, I realized repentance is really just a changing of our thinking. It means to change our thoughts. You know, like, really, you're changing 180 degrees from what you thought. And that's all it is you change your thoughts, then your behaviors then are predicated on thoughts. So if you change your thinking, you will behave differently. So if you're driving along the freeway and you're speeding, and then you think, I'm not going to get pulled over, you're not going to slow down. But if you think you're going to get pulled over, you will slow down. There's a real change in how the way we respond based on our thoughts. And Jesus asks us to find the truth in him and come to the truth, and that will set you free. But one of the things that I had to be humbled on is that I found myself having a very judgmental and very black heart towards people who are judgmental and have black hearts. So how ironic is that? Like, I would get very triggered by somebody judging somebody as I sat and judged them. And the irony of it is just so comical, you know?
The judgment loop. Yep.
Yes, exactly. And I've just found, like, oh my gosh, they're doing the best they can, just like me. They're blind about this one thing. How can I love them through this or help them better see where we're coming from and have these conversations that are complex, and also be patient as people's paradigm shift, because, you know, it takes a long time sometimes to see from certain vantage points. We're all the amalgamation of our experiences, right? And nothing changes somebody's experience more than being in proximity with the reality of someone else, right? So I love what you said. If we want them to have empathy for us, can we first give the gift we want to receive?
Yeah,
so that's really beautiful. So tell us, Kurt, like, what is it that's most exciting about your work? I mean, I asked you, like, the question about what's hardest. What's the most life-giving or blows your hair back? Or you said you wake up every day and you're like, yay, I get to be a part of this mission. Maybe it's not the remuneration that you would have had as a financial advisor or some other field, but it's like, you know, what is it that makes you tick and lights your soul up? You have this precious life to do only so much with your time. What's the best part about it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, some of these topics that I deal with, I geek out about, are so silly that other people look at me like, what's wrong with you? But we all have our quirks, right? Our thing. But even, you know, talking about, you know, how to run a meeting or how to mentor somebody through an addiction or I just geek out about these things. And to go out there and interview, you know, I get to read a book of somebody who spent so much time researching on a really interesting topic. And then I get to interview that person and ask some very specific questions in the context of church leadership and the things I learn. I mean, I really started leading Saints from a very selfish standpoint of, like, you know what? I want to create an organization that I really wish existed and would help me as a leader. So I'm going to do that. And, you know, so many times I let out with my questions and things, and turns out that many people had the same questions. And so just to find, you know, new thought or perspective or research that's out there and dig in and then offer something to the greater leadership world who's just striving to do their best, and to hear from them about the encouragement and the, hey, we're trying this new thing because I listened to that episode, or, you know, I didn't know you could do what that guy was doing and we started doing it. We've seen so much benefit in our area of the world. You know, just yesterday I talked with a bishop in in Australia who has benefited so much from so many of our resources. I'm like, man, that's the best payday. And so that I get to wake up and deep dive on such a unique issue and geek out about it and learn more about it is that's what gets me up every day.
That is so sweet. I love that you're so such a zealot and you find so much joy in uncovering truth. Like, that's so powerful. So what are the, you know, this, thank you so much for coming on the show. I have like one last kind of a big question. It's a big esoteric question, but like, what are some of the great truths that you found in your life from your walk and your walk with God? Like, what are the great truths you want to leave to your children or the people you love around you that you really feel, you know, just if you can't probably encapsulate all of them, but when you just think off the top of your head, these are themes that I just like, I'm so grateful to be tethered to.
Yeah. You know, life offers us such heaviness at times, and there can be so many dark days and struggles, and everybody, you know, as Brene Brown says, nobody writes for free. Like, everybody has a story that if you heard, it would just break your heart, right? And in that context of that world we live in, we all need a higher power to surrender it to hand it over and give it to, because you are not capable of carrying that around. Now, it's my contention that Christianity offers the a wonderful way, a wonderful person to give that to, and a God who came to earth to experience mortality with us, to suffer for us, and to offer redemption. Like, Jesus is the answer in my world. Like, If anybody came to me a hard day, like, yeah, there's a bunch of research, there's therapy, there's all these things. But at the end of the day, you need to surrender it to Jesus Christ. And if you don't have that higher power to surrender to, it's going to be a tough go. And please reach out to somebody who can maybe help you through that.
That is so beautiful. You know, one of my friends actually had on the podcast, Mike Glauser, he wrote a book and did a bunch of academic research around some of the seven major world religions, like major pillars, and where that Venn diagram of shared values or shared core beliefs are. And one of the very first ones was this idea of surrendering to a higher power, what you just nailed. And it's like every core religion has that at its impetus, this idea that there's something bigger and more beautiful than us. I think that even the Stoics, even agnostics, anybody, you know, there's something inside of us that go at some point, things are out of our, that's a fact. We have only a locus of so much control. Like that, you know, that locus of control is like limited. And at some point we have to have this benevolent, I guess, acknowledgement and humility to say like, okay, I'm handing this over, and whatever that looks like for people. But the idea that it's something that is loving and benevolent and for you is so is just so hopeful and so delightful and brings so much peace if you really, really get to that place. So I love what you're sharing. Kurt, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your heart and the great work you're doing to help encourage people on their path towards that peace and that freedom and that light and the complexities of what you deal with every day. What a hero you are. I'm so glad to have met you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again for coming on the show, Kurt.
Do you need help with the next steps for your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call to schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at www.capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.